everyone. This is David Hayward, and today I'm talking with one of the members of The Lasting Supper, Julia Rogers. Hello, Julia.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Awesome.
Good to hear your voice.
Yes, you as well.
It's funny, you know, when you see somebody on Facebook, and then you hear their voice, and sometimes it's like, oh yeah, that's what they should sound like, and then other times it's like, that's surprising. But anyway.
Definitely.
Yeah. Good to hear your voice. So, I don't know anything about you.
Oh, wow.
So, one of the reasons why... Okay, are you playing with your microphone?
No, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
It sounded like you were adjusting something.
Okay, should be good now.
Okay. The reason why we do these podcasts, and we only go like about 20 minutes or something, is just mostly to let people know that they're not crazy, that we're all normal people going through normal stuff. And so I just like interviewing some of our members just to let us get acquainted with you and see, you know, what your background is and how you're surviving and all that kind of thing. So I don't know anything about you. But maybe you can fill us in. How did you get to the Lasting Supper? What led you to that?
I have a sort of complicated religious background.
Right.
Which I can go into more detail about if you want. But I have a friend from college who similarly sort of parted from her Christian faith and is in more of an exploratory realm right now. Mm-hmm. She and I reconnected, and she was part of the Lasting Supper, and she recommended that I check it out because I was really in need of some social support and people to bounce ideas off respectfully and non-judgmentally. So
cool.
That's why I came to join.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So where do you live? What do you do?
I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I'm a graduate of the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. I work for the university in a childhood obesity research lab, so I study how low-income populations, why we see a really high incidence of childhood obesity in low-income populations.
I see. Cool.
It's great. I get a lot of toddler spit on me, and sometimes they pee on me, and it's really gross and really fun, and I like it.
All for science.
All for science. I'm sacrificing.
That's right. So you said you had a complicated religious background. What do you mean by that?
So I was raised in a family that was not religious, and they sort of left it up to my siblings and I to decide for ourselves what we believed.
Right.
And I have sort of a difficult mental health background. I had an eating disorder, and I have OCD. And in the midst of my sort of struggles in high school, I was pretty severely sick with an eating disorder for 7 years, and that was mainly in high school, in junior high, and early college. So I came to the university and was really needing support and was able to, like, really freely explore spirituality for the first time. So I kind of fell into a Christian community because there were a lot of, you know, even people seeking out people like me. And so I was a part of the church here on campus for about 3 or 4 years. And then kind of as soon as I graduated, left, because I had this feeling that something wasn't right, but I didn't really explore that in detail. I didn't really have a good emotional or intellectual foundation for that. And I really existed in that world of uncertainty for the past 4 years or so since I've been out of school. And with OCD and religion, eventually, it turned into a bit of a crisis an existential crisis for me. And I kind of talked about it with my friends the past 4 years, feeling like I was in a permanent existential crisis, and I didn't know what I believed. And OCD is really like a pathological intolerance of uncertainty.
Yes.
And it's very much like a wandering anxiety. It'll fall on a thing that I obsess about for a period of time, and then I'll resolve it, and I'll feel good for a period of time, and then it'll move to something else. Mm-hmm. And eventually it moved from things that people could easily reassure me about, like my health or not hurting someone on accident in my car to fears about my salvation and right. of hell.
Right.
And really, like, was very terrifying because no one could really tell me, you're not going to die, or I know for certain you're not going to go to hell.
Right.
Or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that really forced me this summer to... It was very much like a blessing in disguise in that it really, like, forced me to work through my questions about religion and, like, to sort of seek out, like, intellectually, where do I stand? What can I lean on? Emotionally, how do I feel about Christianity and different spiritual paths?
All right.
So, that's kind of where I've gotten to this place where I feel a little more secure with my uncertainty, but because of the OCD element, it's very scary at times.
Have you posted in the Lasting Supper some articles about OCD and religion? I think there have been articles put up there.
Yes, I did. I posted one by a guy named Fletcher Wortman, who writes a lot about... it's a type of OCD called scrupulosity. And I think there's talk of previous famous religious thinkers who've struggled with this. So I posted an article he wrote about... trying to explain to people what it's like to deal with OCD.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
It's basically like thinking about the worst thing you could imagine, which for me was going to hell, and then trying not to think about it.
Yeah.
And with OCD really struggles to not do that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's fascinating, actually, how, like you said, OCD, when you are focused on something that you said people could allay your fears and everything. But when it comes to religion and ethereal things like, and unprovable things like hell and your salvation, then you're really in a catch-22. I mean, it's a horrible place to be where there's nothing that can be said to reassure you.
Absolutely.
So then your approach to it then is to change your thinking? Change your mind?
I've taken sort of a multifaceted approach. So I'm in therapy, which has been very helpful to sort of challenge unreasonable obsessions that I have. I meditate regularly, like every day I try and meditate for 20 minutes, and that really helps me gain control of the direction of my thoughts and just more present in each moment rather than living amidst fears of future things happening that are bad.
Uh-huh.
And then I've really like dug into just researching how I feel about hell and Christianity and salvation from a more, you know, academic, intellectual, emotional, archaeological standpoint, just to sort of feel like I have, you know, a sort of foundation to fall. Not even to fall back on, because I think sometimes with religion, people are trying to defend where they're at, and I just really want, you know, what's true, even if it's inconvenient for me or uncomfortable. I always want to be self-aware of how I'm gravitating towards a particular idea because it's comforting or it makes me feel better, things like that. And then I'm also taking medication, which has really been helpful for boosting my mood, which I'm less likely to, like, obsess when I'm feeling happier.
How much are you willing to share about? So I see sort of a three-pronged approach to what you're doing. One is approach it intellectually and correct some what you might think is erroneous thinking.
Yeah.
And then another one is to meditate and to somehow focus on the present and to center yourself. And then the third one is medication.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about those three? I think because I know a lot of people are going to identify with this and on the Lasting Supper. So let's deal with each one one at a time, if you don't mind. Can you?
Yeah. So I guess intellectually.
What are you reading, like, intellectually, or what are you doing? Like, you talked about even things like archaeology, theology.
Yeah. Lately, I've been very focused on particularly the idea of hell. And so I read a lot of, like, online forums, such as, like, discussions on the Lasting Supper, different, like, atheist blogs, Christian apologetics.
Right.
And I have some very strong feelings about the concept of hell, if you want me to share them, or if not, that's fine. that have sort of where it just, I've come to a point where it doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, it's lost that sort of power over me.
Well, that's awesome. Actually, that's awesome to be able to change your mind like that, because, you know, there's a lot of people who may struggle with, like, let's say the concept of hell for years and years and years, but somehow you've been able to investigate it to the point where you recognize it's not, you don't agree with what you've adopted as a theology of hell.
Exactly.
Well, that's congratulations. That's quite a feat.
It has been. You know, I just think for me personally, I really struggle with this idea that one, an idea of hell is a punishment. I don't think that it's useful if it's a punishment is useful if it's not rehabilitative. And we see that in our prison system today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that...
And with toddlers.
Yeah, also true.
Yeah.
Being sort of the Christian idea that we need to decide in this lifetime who God is and to love that God when God is shrouded in sort of mystery is
right.
Very hard for me, because my earthly father, my dad, Phil, he makes himself known to me and I can still choose to love him or not.
Right.
And really struggle with this idea that God is shrouded in mystery so we can consciously choose to love him and seek him out, because I definitely attempted and am still actively attempting and haven't necessarily received much clarity at all on the matter.
Right.
So I kind of struggle with that idea, and I mean those are sort of the two main points where it kind of falls apart for me.
Well, that's incredible actually. And to do with meditation, who has sort of inspired you in that regards?
There's an author. She's one of the first ordained Buddhist monks that's a woman. And her name is Pema Chodron.
Oh, she's just a few miles from me.
Oh my gosh, she's amazing.
Yeah, she is amazing.
So I've read a lot of her works, particularly a book called Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change, where she talks a lot about...
Living with Uncertainty is one of my favorite books.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And it is good.
About, you know, like dealing with the sort of fundamental ambiguity of being human and our impermanence. And that's been really... Just, I've been learning to embrace kind of like my uncertainty and my potential mortality and to really welcome that. And with that, I've experienced a lot of joy because I'm no longer rejecting this idea that I'm going to die or needing to live forever. I'm accepting what I've been given now as a gift. And that's been really beautiful for me. So she also talks a lot about meditation and...
Mm-hmm.
Just using that to be fully present in each moment of your life and to really, like, rather than ignore the things that scare us, sort of welcome them and live amidst them and to balance sort of the light and the dark in our daily existence rather than avoiding them and sort of changing how I think about my suffering rather than
right.
Trying to avoid suffering.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
And then, so you're a little bit Buddhist too.
Yes, definitely.
and in terms of medication, would you say you are you treating the OCD or depression or anxiety or panic or?
Medication came in to treat the OCD, so I'm taking Prozac, and I had a lot of mixed feelings about taking medication because I read a lot about radical mental health, and some people are very opposed to psychopharmaceuticals, but. I was in a pretty desperate spot, and I tried it, and it's absolutely not only boosted my mood, but helped me have greater control over my anxious thoughts. I'm on a low dose of Prozac, and I think it works for some people, and it doesn't work for others, and I totally respect people making that decision for themselves, but I was surprised by how helpful it's been for me.
Yeah, I've got friends, people I love in my life who, you know, I used to be a skeptic of... psychopharmaceuticals as well, but then somebody I love very much, very depressed, very anxious, panic, went to see a psychiatrist, put her through some tests, and then gave her a cocktail of some drugs, and the next day she was better. It was unbelievable. It was like a miracle. So it was you know, just amazing. But then I know other people who are constantly changing their drugs, trying to find the right mixture or the right combination. They're just experiencing frustration.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's been really important to me that the drugs are one component of a larger plan to maintain my well-being.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, did you mention therapy or anything? Have you talked with counselors or anything like that as well? Or have you been doing this on your own?
I am in therapy every other week. So I see a counselor who actually has struggled with religious type OCD herself. Mm-hmm. And she has more of a mindfulness based approach, which focuses on meditation primarily. And then obviously the drug based approach. And that's been very helpful for me.
Wow. Well, you know, I want to congratulate you because, well, actually, we said three-prong, but it's four-prong. There's the intellectual approach. There's where you change your mind, meditation, where you learn how to center yourself and find inner peace. Mm-hmm. The third one is therapy, and then also medication. So it sounds like you're taking really good care of yourself, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think I'm learning for the first time to trust my gut. And I think particularly for a long time with religion and spirituality, there was a lot of what if thinking, like, you know, I feel like this is not right for me, but I'm scared. And so I'm going to Pascal's wager it up and believe it anyway, because the consequences are so potentially dire when you think about hell.
Yeah.
I think I'm in a space now where I refuse to live a life that's directed by fear anymore. And that's been very powerful for me, I would say.
Wow. That's very inspiring too.
Yeah.
So would you say, compare your life to 5 years ago, would you say it's dramatically changed?
Oh yeah. I would say it's much fuller. Mm-hmm. I'm able to live life amidst all of the joy and the sorrow that comes with it, rather than trying to constantly escape suffering and live in a world beyond this one. And also, I mean, my mental health is so much better. I'm not, you know, having issues with food. My anxiety is more under control. I'm happier. Mm-hmm. Things I really struggled with in the church too. Not trying to say that the church was to blame, but it wasn't helping.
No. A lot of people at the Lasting Supper would identify with somehow the church can support toxic thinking, the only way that they could experience any kind of relief from that was to leave it.
Yes, absolutely.
So, what do you do for fun?
Oh my gosh, I do a lot. I really love to go dancing, and I like go to a monthly dance party that is themed, so I like making costumes, and I used to brew beer, but not as much anymore. And I'm a huge nerd. I love comic books, and...
What's your favorite comic?
There's a comic called I Kill Giants. And it's about a little girl who is super nerdy and no one in her school really likes her. And her mom is dying of cancer and she's convinced herself that she needs to kill giants in her backyard every night. And so she believes there are giants that she's killing. And it's kind of a, you know, a metaphor for her dealing with her mom's cancer and feeling like she needs to fight something. And she learns through the book that she's stronger than she thinks she is. And sometimes... to really fight a battle, you have to, like, accept what's happening around you, too, and learn, you know, when to fight and when to just, like, be with your circumstances and finding that balance. Cool. It's really beautiful and funny and silly.
Is it a comic book or is it an online comic or what?
It is a comic book. It's called I Kill Giants, and it's by a guy named Joe Kelly. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. It's really
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
So you like dancing and making costumes and drinking beer and reading comics. What else?
I play Dungeons and Dragons sometimes.
Oh, geez, you're really going to hell now.
Yeah, and I just enjoy spending time with my friends, being with my friends. I'm going on a trip to Madison, Wisconsin this weekend to see high school friends, and that's really important to me. So, yeah.
Well, you sound great.
Thank you.
Nice to get to know you a little bit better, and I really love your involvement on the Lasting Supper. Every once in a while, you'll pop in and you'll say something really wise and funny, and I think that's cool.
Absolutely. I like to bring a little humor into life because it gets serious sometimes and it's hard.
Oh, yeah. You know, you see what I put up there, right? Like sometimes it's serious stuff and then other times it's a silly picture or something. But
oh, yeah. Definitely.
You got to have balance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Julia, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really good to get to know you better.
Thank you. And thanks for having the Lasting Supper out there and available. It's been a wonderful support. I'm really grateful for it.
Well, I am too. And thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
And you too. And have a good trip.
I will.
All right. See you when you get back.
Yep.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Julia Rogers, member of the Lasting Supper. What a fascinating discussion. If you would like me to interview you for one of our Meet a Member podcasts, I'd love to chat with you. You see how easy it is. It's nothing. Don't be nervous. Come on, give it a shot. Just let me know, and we'll get you on here. Thanks for now, guys. Love all you guys at the Lasting Supper, and we'll see you there. Bye.